Day.
Oh no, Tish and Pish wouldn't have stopped Grandfather fighting the Bosch, would it?
I'm sure it wouldn't. Welcome to Sustainababble 67!
67! We are your friendly little environment podcast all about people and the planet, and why can't we have a joke about it all every now and then? And what have we got coming up this week?
Oh, well, Dave, there has been a big old news story coming out of the United States of America where a nasty pipeline isn't, it seems, going to go through some water, which was going to be fouled up, that water. Now, what do you know about geese, Dave?
They've got a big bill.
Correct. They're also they're foul, aren't they?
Oh, no, they're nice.
Hey, yes. Yeah, well, these fowl are dead fowl, so we're going to be talking about a large number of very, very dead fowl. What do you know about Donald Trump, Dave?
He's an arsehole.
Very, very true. He's a foul arsehole, so, and he's appointed another foul arsehole. So we're going to be talking about that in What Donald Done. And now, this is exciting. This is... We don't know what's going to happen. It's like doing a kind of live TV... It's something in the 90s. We have got reasons to be cheerful. I think there are three very interesting reasons to be cheerful. However, Dave is editing this week and he thinks they're dull. So if I can do them in an interesting enough way, there will be some interesting some reasons to be cheerful. If not, you know what happened.
Just the usual disclaimer, we do work for environmental charities, but these are very much our own views. So if you have any beef with anything that you hear us bang on about in this episode, take it up with us and not with anyone that we work for, yes?
Absolutely. Right, off we go!
Anti-Enough of the Week.
So, Anti-Inhofe of the Week, this is the section where we look for the people who have been heroes and sheroes standing up in the tide of Inhofes to do good things for the planet. Who are we celebrating this week, Dave?
Well, we are. Let me take you by the hand and lead you across to North Dakota, which is in America. It's one of the states of America. It's in the, where is it? Kind of like a toppy sort of left,
middly toppy bit.
I used to work with an American dude who got really, really knocked off with me that I didn't know where all the states of America was.
And there's loads.
I know. I said there was loads. And he'd go, yeah, there are loads, but there's loads of countries in Europe. And you'd get knocked off with me if I didn't know where like Latvia was, and I said, "Fair point." However, you're in my country.
I don't know where Latvia is.
No, well, exactly.
Stop talking about American things.
What's happened?
There's been a pipeline hoo-ha. That's what's gone.
Oh no, not again.
Yeah, another great pipeline hoo-ha. Now you remember about a year ago we were talking about your original pipeline hoo-ha, which was Keystone XL.
Yeah, the massive hose pipe.
Massive hose pipe, which your man, all round man hunk, and still then and still now, technically, all round president of the free world and great guy Barry Obie had put a kibosh on, and this was a pipeline that was going to connect up some tar sands in Canada with international markets, not to put too fine a point on it. And people went, bugger off, don't build that. And he went, all right, you're right, I shan't build it. And everyone on the side of righteousness went, woohoo! And everyone on the side of money went, oh, I'm going to kick your ass when I get a chance, right? Including Donald Trump.
And one of them went, oh, shit, I better get elected president so that I can build it.
Yeah, quite. Exactly. And so there's been another one, and this one is called the Dakota Access Pipeline. Now, this one is a lot more advanced than Keystone XL because it's basically built, and it's connecting up oil coming from shale up in a place called the Bakken Shale, which is kind of toppy lefty of America, to Illinois, which is kind of middly century of America, where there's a big hose pipe junction. So they're building a hose pipe from the shale oil, and it will take it about 1,000 miles, sort of in a bottom righty direction across America, to join up in the middly century bit where it connects up with all the other hose pipes, and then it can get into our cars. Yum, yum.
One of the things I love about this podcast is just the range of subjects on which we are prodigiously expert, one of which is geography.
I'd rather have a runny nose than a runny brain.
Hey?
Anyway, so, all right, well, it's pretty much done then. What's the big deal? Why are we talking about it?
Well, because right at the last knock-ins, they wanted to run this hose pipe.
Right at the last what?
Knock-ins. At the last knock-ins. Yeah, last knock-ins. They built it all, apart from this bit at the very end, where there was a bunch of Native Americans, First Nation people, called the Standing Rock Tribe of the Sioux, S-I-O-U-X. And they live near a lake called Lake Oahe.
Which is probably very offensive to somebody, but how do you pronounce O-A-H-E?
Well, you don't, do you?
Who knows?
It's stupid. Hasn't got enough syllables in it. and it was. It's a big old lake that has two very important purposes for the Sioux. Number one being they get drinking water out of it. Number two is kind of sacred, and it's got great sort of spiritual meaning to them. And this hose pipe was going to go under it, basically.
Last
knockings, yeah, they were gonna put the hose pipe, start it at one end, snake it underneath, come out the other end, Bob's your uncle, lots of lovely oil. So obviously you've got your potential of oil spills. You've also got the kind of, not to put too fine a point on it, dicking around with an area of spiritual significance to a bunch of people who have not, in the scheme of America, been treated very well over the years.
No, in the scheme of humanity.
No, indeed. And it's suspicion it's all kind of our fault if you go back far enough.
So the Sioux people have said, no, sod off. And they've been joined, rather wonderfully, by an awful lot of other people jointly saying, sod off, get your dirty hosepipe out of here. And last weekend, this happened.
The Dakota Access Pipeline easement to cross the Missouri River has been denied.
We're ecstatic.
Excited.
We jumped up and down, hugged each other.
News of the easement's denial came in around 3:30 this afternoon. Since then, cars have been streaming in and out of the camp. People have been celebrating.
Which is pretty blinking amazing. So what's happened here? Go Sioux. Here, do you remember Sooty and Sweet?
Yes.
Whenever, literally for the last, I know this is profoundly offensive and I am sorry, but whenever anyone has been talking about the Sioux for the last week, this is all I've heard.
Oh dear, you really shouldn't have squirted that security guard, Sooty. You just thought he looked thirsty. Oh, well, in that case, I think he was very ungrateful. Yes, we...
Oh, your brain's a funny place, isn't it?
I'm so sorry, Suze. A few things to say about this, right? So what has happened is it's all military land, as you were telling me earlier, isn't it? Like, so most of the length of this hose pipe is along private land.
That's why it's all got done.
Yeah, that's why they've done
so
it.
It's just, you know, hello, Mr. Landowner. Here's a bunch of cash. Can we put a hose pipe there? Yep. Move along.
But this last bit at the end, it's owned by the American military, and the Sioux are allowed through. And I don't understand the mechanism by which the Sioux are allowed to use it still as their kind of homeland, even though they don't own it. I don't know. I just don't know, and I'm not going there, right?
But at this point, I mean, we should probably say, ideally, we'd be speaking to someone who, like, you know, lives there or is part of the process and knows about it. But what with, you know, America being a stupid amount of hours behind and this being a stupid early time in the morning to be recording a podcast, Dave, your benefit, we're having to just, you know, try and explain it ourselves, which is never massively satisfactory, but, you know, bear with us.
No, but we know some stuff, right? So we know that the Army Corps of Engineer, basically the people who are deciding whether to give it a permit to go ahead or not, said no under what looks like fairly strong. So under what looks like pretty strong direction from outgoing Manhunk and President of the Free World, Barack Obama, who, quite frankly, I am getting very upset about not being in charge of stuff anymore. Yes, look, as you quite rightly point out, not exactly said no to. What specifically happened?
Oh, God, don't ask me what specifically
is
happening.
Well, no, but it's not a definite no bugger off forever, is it?
No, it's not a bugger off forever. It's not you shall never do this hose pipe through this bit of water. It's, okay, we're not going to grant you the easement, which is a sort of legal term. Oh, put the easement music on, Dave.
Oh, Gordon Bennett.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm so eased.
Heavens to Betsy. Oh, it's turned off.
Yes, the easement, which is sort of permission to go through a bit of land, has not yet been granted.
Easement.
But there's basically just hoops that need jumping through. So you've got to consider other alternative routes more properly than there have been already and probably do a bit of consultation, that sort of stuff. But there are some clever lawyer types in America who are writing about it and already in quite worried terms going, hang on a minute, looking at this actual statement from the military lot, this doesn't look like it's over forever. We need to push for courts to say other stuff. So, as ever, devil is in the detail. But the symbolism of it is great.
Now.
Hello.
Here are some things I wanted to talk about, right? So shut up and talk about them. My voice is going funny. So, thing number one, right? This wasn't like the Keystone protest stuff from a year ago, because this got really horrible.
This is a militarized police force up against an unarmed, peaceful prayer for people.
So I was out there, one of the first ones in the water, maced us. It hurts.
This was like people standing in minus 20 degrees in the snow being battered with water, like freezing water out of water cannons, and like having to endure it for ages. And it had like American war veterans were involved. You see that? They're like forming human shields. So like everyone's sort of weighing in on, and it got really kind of like, it's obviously about something much bigger than just this hose pipe in just this place. And it's not really, as far as I can work out, primarily about climate change either, from what I can see.
I mean, you know, that argument is being made. But it's not where it's starting from. Yeah, I mean, I felt the same about it. And when I first heard about it, I was hideously ignorant about it, as I am about most things, but assumed it was about whether or not this entire pipeline gets built. Yep. And it's not. No. It's about this little section of it.
Because it is going to get built. I mean, they'll snake it around another way. It'll cost them a bit more. And, you know, incoming Orange Inhofe president of the free world, Donald Trump, has basically said he's going to build it. So, it will get built.
But the level of feeling on both sides was intense, and it just makes you think about sort of, you know, I occasionally drag my sorry ass to a climate march and it's a bit chilly, and you know, and I stomp round London in perfect safety for a few hours and I go, oh, aren't I heroic? Done my bit for the planet.
Yeah, booing as you go past McDonald's. Boo! Yeah. Boo McDonald's. I say, are you going to stay for the speeches? No. I have to go, and I'm sort of a very, very long, long day. They're terribly important. Must go and sit in a pub and talk about belching.
Yes, exactly. So when you know, in contrast to what the frankly extraordinary people up in Standing Rock have been doing, you feel a bit piddly, because they have been standing in standing water, which, you know, as opposed to the UK, which is ridiculously warm at the moment, it is very cold out there. They're standing there, they're not budging, they are getting freezing water cannons rained down them. It's now snowing. You've got police there and, you know, in the sort of gear that looks like something out of Minority Report or, you know, iRobot or something. It's all just really apocalyptic. And they're just, it's amazing. They're properly standing firm. But as you say, it's clearly about something very, very profound in terms of, you know, our rights and our rights to determine what happens on our land, as opposed to just should we or shouldn't we have a pipeline.
And not just our rights either, and this is the thing. I mean, I think you've got to be an American to kind of properly understand this, but it's all got to do with the treatment of the First Nations over the centuries. And that was the
great, which I think can be summed up as pretty shoddy.
Yeah, shafted repeatedly. And that was, I think, the great symbolism of this, was it was a bunch of very peaceful dudes and dudettes living by a lake that they basically attached great spiritual significance to, that the man was coming along and attempting to put a hosepipe under, and they were saying, go on, not do that. And the man was saying, I'm going to do that. Not only am I going to do that, I'm going to water cannon you in the face. And everybody kind of around the country, and indeed further around the world, said, piss off, how dare you leave them, Sue, alone, right? Yeah. And people around the world, you see, everyone was checking in on their Facebook profiles. You saw that happening?
I found that was amazing.
That was great, wasn't it?
I was away at the time. I can't remember why I was away. But anyway, yeah, I suddenly saw all these people who I was fairly sure weren't in America checking in at Standing Rock. And it was brilliant. I do love, you know, the internet is crap and time-wasting in many ways, but I do love the creative opportunities it gives for dissent like that. And the reason that was happening is because apparently the police were looking at the profiles of the people who were there and trying to sort of, I don't know, block them or check them out, do some basic surveillance. And so the theory was, well, if thousands, even millions of people check in at this place, we're just going to confuse them. And they did, and I think it worked to some extent.
Yati is here with us. And we have a lot of people, not only around here, but all over the world praying with us right now.
So I just wanted to ask you one final thing, really, Ol, and it's kind of the most important thing of all, and I'm not sure what to think of it, but I think it's significant, and it's about protest.
You've got your significant face on.
This is my significant face. It's about protest in general, right? About protest in general, about like big kind of battly things where the man wants to do something and people don't want to do something, and there's a big hoo-ha about it, and it starts to take on a much broader significance beyond the specifics of the thing that's being campaigned about. So, example, right, fracking. In this country here.
Now,
we've not had any fracking here for like five and a bit ever. We're here, five and a bit evers.
I think it's 2011 or when the last bit happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So not had any fracking going on. And that's primarily because of people all around the country getting their placards out, dressing up as like windmills and saying, no, sod off, how dare you, go away, take your beastly fracking pipes and don't come here and befoul our beautiful countryside and stuff, right?
Yes.
And we should give some props and a shout out to another anti-Inhofe of the week, who is a legendary anti-fracking campaigner, Tina Rothray, up in the north, who the man wanted to send to prison and she didn't get sent to prison.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah.
Tina should be like permanent resident of anti-Inhofe corner anyway, because she's just fantastic. But yes, very, very good news that she isn't going to get banged up because Quadrilla wants to get loads of money out of her.
But here's the thing, right, Ol? So all them fracking campaigns, they start off primarily, I think, and you know more about fracking than I do, they start off primarily with a bunch of people in a place facing a very specific threat, right?
Yeah.
So the man wants to come and frack your begonias, right? And people go, I like my begonias, they're very pretty, and sod off, you can't have my begonias, right?
Yeah.
And then they turn into much bigger things than that. They turn into, so like all your big professional, suited, very overpaid anti-fracking national campaigners, like descend upon a local place and they say, yes, quite right, we agree, right? And then you'll get like other people from other things will descend upon a place. People who think like the man is bad just because he's the man, they'll take part as well, right?
Yeah.
And then you'll get like other people, like sort of local, the Begonia Association will join in because they think begonias is really important, right? And suddenly what you've got, and then these things become national things, and then the police get involved, and then people like Caroline Lucas come along, and then she gets nicked and they capture the imagination, and kind of everyone's protesting about something like a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah.
Is that all right?
Oh, that's your question, is it?
Yeah.
That's another of your pithy little questions. Is that all right? Yes, it is. It's very important, isn't it? And I was thinking the other day about Newbury Bypass and the protests around that. And it's 20 years, I think, since that, terrifyingly. And that was, you know, that was never just about that bypass, was it? It was about the government of the time wanting to build and explicitly wanting to build a shed load of roads. And
how many roads can you fit in a shed? Oh.
Well, if you layer them up, probably about six or seven. It wanted to build a lot of roads through whatever was in the way, and people going, no, because we're in the way. It might not be the most beautiful bit of the country, but it's our bit of the country. And that is why protest is important. And if you talk to Tina or any of the other fracking nanas or people who have been fighting this stuff for years, they say, you know, they wish that they'd never got into fracking because it's taken over their lives when they were quite happy just pootling along and doing their normal thing. They weren't
making jam, being nanas, they weren't
environmentalists first and foremost. They were people who lived in an area that was suddenly, as you say, the man was just going to come and shit on, basically. It is most effective when you bring together disparate groups who, like you say, are protesting for slightly different reasons, but united in what they're protesting against. And that's, I guess what you're getting at is this something similar in Standing Rock? Because, like we were saying earlier, it isn't going to materially affect climate change because this oil is going to get transported through a pipeline that's going to get built and it's going to get sold and burnt. But it does do a very good job in bringing this stuff to the public attention and in also bringing together groups of people who might not always have been on the same side of everything but are united in saying, no, this is our land, sod off. The other thing I think it does tell you, though, is that environmental protest is changing and changing for the better because, I mean, it's not that long ago that it was basically the same 12 guys, and they usually were guys, in a boat from Greenpeace going around probably mortally offending indigenous people, saying, well, you can't do this here, and getting written off as rent a mob. That's a massive oversimplification, and apologies to anyone involved in Greenpeace. No, but
it's
at the time.
Basically right, isn't it? Swampy. You remember Swampy?
Yeah, I do. I love Swampy. And now it's not like that. Now it is. Can I use the word intersectional? Or does that give me a? Okay, fair enough. It's lots of different people from different sides of the tracks, I guess, and not just the same old crusties. And I think that's wonderful and powerful, and I think does give us a reason for hope. Really, you know, the more that these protests take this sort of form, the fewer of the nasty, horrible projects built by the nasty, horrible man are actually going to happen.
Things Donald Dan.
So, Things Donald Dan. This is the section where we see what atrocious, awful, world-ending actions the President-elect of the United States has taken. What's he gone and done this week, Dave?
He's not even bloody president yet. I mean, I don't... This is the thing. It's like someone buys your house, right? And it's like your neighbours getting upset about something that the person who's going to be moving into your house has done to the back garden before they've actually moved into it. It's like he's determined to mess stuff up before he's even arrived. What he's done this week is he's picked a massive Inhofe, but not the Inhofe who was Inhofe, but another Inhofe.
Hang on a minute. Didn't we think that this job was going to go to Inhofe? Wasn't that what we were saying last week?
Yeah, you thought that. I never thought that. But yeah, that's okay. Well, we did say that Twitter thought it was going to happen, but Twitter does not necessarily represent reality. So what he has done is he's picked a climate change denier, a guy called Scott Pruitt, to run the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Agency, which is the bit of America that looks after the parks and the water and the bears and the ugly fish and all that sort of thing, right? And this is a guy who has said things like this. Scientists continue to disagree about the degree and extent of global warming and its connections. Shut up. This is what Scott Pruitt says, and he's the head of the EPA, so he knows more about the environment than you do, right? And its connection to the actions of mankind. That debate should be encouraged in classrooms, public forums, and the halls of Congress. It should not be silenced with threats of prosecution. Dissent is not a crime, unless, you know, you are a Standing Rock Sioux, in which case you get water cannons put in your face. Yeah. But that's a separate matter, isn't it?
That's different dissent.
Yeah, so he thinks climate change is a good thing, it's actively a good thing, that schools and public debating chambers say that the science of climate change is bunk.
Mm. Well, and more than that, something that you dug up in an article on the New York Times, apparently they discovered that letters that Mr. Pruitt sent, on the proper headed paper with the old eagles on the top. He sent to the EPA and the Interior Department, and even President Barry Obi, leader of the free world, were in fact drafted by energy lobbyists. So that's good. It doesn't sound like he's got his judgment clouded by anyone with massive vested interest in pursuing fossil fuels or anything.
What? He's a Christian, right? He thinks that, like, God created the earth and all that stuff Christians think, right? And he set up this thing called Christian Legal Services. He's a lawyer, and the point of what this organisation does is when the government does something that compromises individual rights, he sues them. Not sue as in, like, Standing Rock sue. Sue as in, stop doing that or I'll hit you with a writ.
Cease and desist.
But, like, I don't get it. I don't get which bit of the Bible says it is really... When Jesus didn't go round and stand on the mount and say, come unto me, my followers, it's really important that you do whatever you want and sod everyone else.
Now look, no one is to stone anyone until I blow this whistle. Do you understand? Even, and I want to make this absolutely clear, even if they do say Jehovah.
However, a possible slight reason to be a bit more cheerful, Al. Donald Trump's got a daughter, somehow. I'm not sure gynecologically how that happened, but...
what are your intentions here, Dave?
Nothing at all. This is Ivanka Trump, scheduled to be the world's first daughter, because, like, people are paying more attention to what she says than what her mum says, right? And what something she said...
What does her mum feel about that? Like, is this a thing? Like, is her mum... Is Melania... I'm not sure if that even is her mum, but is Trump's wife, Melania, just going, it's fine, I won't have a role?
That's what my mum would be like, I think. Like, if my mum became First Lady, I think she'd be ever so kind of, oh, no, it's all right, darling, you handle it.
No, you do it. You go ahead. No, it's fine.
You go ahead. I don't want to go and talk to them people. Thanks very much. Don't want to go meet ambassadors. And Ivanka, shut up and listen, right? Ivanka has been banging on about climate change and basically saying, despite the fact that her dad is a big Orange Inhofe, saying that climate change is important. So there are reports that she's gone and met with all-round permanent resident of Anti-Inhofe Corner, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Al Gore, also resident of Anti-Inhofe Corner, and basically learnt loads of stuff about climate change. So you've got the really weird situation of the daughter of the president of the free world thinking climate change is important, and she's likely, by the way, to take over running all his business empire and stuff, given that to his great reluctance he's had to give all of that up in order to be president, whereas her dad, who is the boss of the free world, is a massive Orange Inhofe, and I'm not quite clear how that's going to work, but I do think it's a bit interesting.
Sustainable of the week.
So, Sustainable of the week. This is the section where we have a little look at some of the egregious eco guff that has been spoken, usually in the name of people trying to sound greener than they are, or just in idiotic officials being idiotic and obfuscating. Who's been obfuscating and eco-guffing this week, Dave?
Oh, this is horrible, this. Oh, there's no point trying to pretend.
He's got his sad face.
Well, there's no point trying to pretend this isn't an horrible thing that's happened, because it is an horrible thing that's happened, right? Do you remember back in episode... Oh, crikey, I want to say like 8 or something like that. One of our very early episodes, the first ever really good bit of babble we had, when there were a couple of avian incidents, when a death ray was turned on loads of birds. Do you remember that?
Well, yes. And for people who, amazingly, I think some people haven't listened to every single episode we ever did. It wasn't exactly a death ray. It was a big old concentrated solar farm where they got the focus ever so slightly wrong and accidentally shone all of the sunlight at a load of birds and killed them. Yes, I remember that.
Indeed. Well, so something not the same, but something like that has kind of happened again. This is back in America. We may as well call ourselves American babble. Everything's about America. We need to do stuff that isn't about America anymore. For God's sake, Ol.
Well, it's probably a good time to bury bad babble, isn't it? In the UK, because everyone's so focused on the Orange Wizard that they're probably doing all sorts of nasty stuff here and we're not noticing. So yes, next week, Wizard. UK.
So this is in Montana, which is in America, which is up in the sort of toppy lefty bit as well, isn't it? Or is it the toppy century bit?
Where
is
it? Don't know.
Anyway, there's a thing that used to be an open cast pit. We talked about open cast mining back in episode... Uh, We've talked about open cast mining before when we were talking about Drurridge, Drurridge Bay a few episodes ago. And what that is where you go along to a place and you dig it, like you just take the top off it and get all the coal out, and then you've left with a great big massive hole in the ground. And one of the things you then have to do is work out what you do about it. And in Montana, they have one of these big holes in the ground where it's full of water, but the water's all horrible. The water's all toxic.
Yeah, it's a big hole in the ground as well. It's like 45 billion gallons of water in this hole.
Crikey Moses. And what's it? It's like metal-laden and acidic. It's basically horrible water, isn't it? It's like drop-dead water. It's horrible.
No, apparently it's a bit of a tourist attraction because it is so awful, and like boat propellers will dissolve in it and stuff. So it's hideous, yeah.
Darling, I've cancelled our trip to the Algarve. I thought for this year perhaps we'd go and take in the toxic waters of the Montana pit.
Now, have you ever seen a propeller dissolve in what looks like water? No, I thought not.
Anyway, loads of birds landed on it and they died.
Oh, way to burst my bubble.
Yeah, sorry about that, mate, but that's what happened. Now, this is like a problem. If you are...
Well, it's a problem for the birds, isn't it?
Well, it is. If you are a bird and you're flying along and you're migrating, you're basically a bird that flies over that, and you're all knackered because you've been flying for ages and your wings are all like, oh, my wings are a bit tired and I fancy having a poo and eating some chips, right? And you land on the first thing that comes along, which looks like a lake. And obviously this lake is full of like toxic nasties. Yeah. And you drop down dead. And if you are the owners of this pit, it's called the Berkeley Pit, and it's in a place called Butt.
And if you are, yes, B-U-T-T-E.
B-U-T-T-E,
but,
yeah.
Can only be pronounced Butt.
Butt.
Or will only be pronounced Butt.
Or Butty. I mean, I'm perfectly happy with Butty, if they want to go with Butty. If you own this pit, you're kind of aware of it. And like, one of the things, fair play, at least credit where it's kind of due, the people, Montana Resources, who own this big old horrible pit thing, know it's a problem, like they're not happy about it, and when they
see
probably birds,
don't want to have to go around fishing dead snow geese out of their poisonous water. I can't imagine that's a great job.
And what they do is they've got these hazing, these things called hazing, and hazing is like how you scare, apparently, I don't know this, a thing where you scare away birds, so you haze.
Yeah.
And so you do things like let fireworks off and run around on the shoreline with your willy out going, go away birds, very bad, and you do an impression of a
You want to be careful
shark.
If you're running around with your willy out when there are birds around, you know, particularly gulls and stuff.
Yes, you do.
Magpies.
But they did that this time. But apparently there were so many birds, like they were sort of totally deluged by birds. And they reckon they managed to scare off like a lot of the birds. But unfortunately, a lot of the other birds said, no, I'm not scared of that. I'm going down there because I want to have some chips. And died.
Yeah, so this isn't a new thing. This place, Butty, is on the migratory route for the snow geese. So every year, a few of them land and aren't hazed off and they die. But the numbers this year, well, the numbers this year are so vast that they're not even numbered. So rather than saying how many geese have died, they're saying how many acres of dead geese they think there are.
How many acres?
Well, they said 700. 700 acres of dead birds is what they're estimating. And they know that around 25,000 were flying in the area. When on average in a given year, and that includes spring and autumn, they only see between sort of 2,000 and 5,000. So a shed load of birds who are now a dead load of birds, which is pretty unpleasant.
Where does the babble come in? Well, the babble comes in because...
Babble.
Yes, the babble. You forgot the
babble of the week.
We're not finished with this section. So Montana Resources do feel a bit bad about this, right? And they feel about it.
I'm sure the 700 acres of dead geese will be, you know, comforted to know that Montana Resources feel a bit bad.
Well, don't worry, Ol, because they've pledged to do this.
Evaluate and assess other or additional measures that are appropriate and can be added to the programme to protect migratory waterfowl in the future.
So don't worry, Alt, they're going to assess other options. They're going to do, if they get deluged by 700 acres of dead birds next time, they're going to make sure they assess other options to stop birds who just want to have a little rest and eat some chips from landing on a toxic soup. What exactly, I don't know, given that they appear to have done everything they possibly could to prevent these birds from landing on the toxic soup, and they did not prevent the birds from landing on the toxic soup, but they're going to do something else. Like what? I don't know, put a massive lid on it, perhaps? Well, I don't imagine they're going to do do that, or like, I don't know, clean up the horrible water. Maybe don't imagine they're going to do that.
But also, how would you clean up this water? Like, if it's, I mean, how do you just go about making 45 billion litres of water, gallon litres of water, not toxic when it already is?
Well, you don't, do you? And that's the point. And so what we've done is we've gone around and build these horrible great things with huge environmental impacts. We leave them there just sloshing around. Loads of birds land on them and dissolve, right? And then we go, oh, crikey Moses. Yeah, we'll do better next time at stopping them birds landing on it. It's totally the wrong way around, right? And I'm not saying the Montana resources don't care about this stuff. Yeah, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they're perfectly nice people. They don't particularly want to have minced, desiccated, dissolving birds clogging up their horrible pit, right? I'm sure they don't want that, but like, it's basically hell. They've made hell, and birds land on it, and all they can really do about it is say, oh, we're gonna try and stop some birds landing on it next year. Well, like, how about next time don't make hell in the first place?
Reasons to be cheerful.
So, reasons to be cheerful. Now, I'm doing this because you bang on, right? And one of the things you want to bang on
crikey Moses. Let's just think about how much...
Reasons to be cheerful. This is the part of the show where we try to find something to be cheerful about. And given we've just been talking about 700 acres of dissolved wildfowl, I think we better look on the bright side. Now, the problem is that Ol has been in charge of sourcing the reasons to be cheerful for this week, and they're all dull. So, to save you, listener, and me from a terrible, terrible tedium, what we're going to do is this. Ol...
Yes.
You've got 30 seconds to persuade me and the listener that these are sections that should be included. Are you up for this challenge?
Absolutely. I can do all three in under 30 seconds.
You reckon
cumulatively.
You reckon you can do 30 seconds, you reckon you can do all three, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Your time starts now.
Right. One of the biggest companies in the world, Google, has said it's going to power all of its resources via renewables. Yay! George Osborne wanted to have a massive dash for gas. He set up an auction called the Capacity Market where you bid for the right to provide bonus electricity. Shit! And everyone thought it was going to go to gas power stations, but it's going to battery storage. Hurrah! And underground coal gasification isn't going to happen in the UK. Woo!
That's not bad. Actually, except I don't know what underground coal gasification is.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Tell me.
Well, it's a bit like fracking,
right,
except
worse. Right,
that's
enough of that. Let's move on.
Oh, that is just about it for Sustainababble 67. Woo, another one in the bag. Thank you very, very much, Dave, for manfully fighting through your terrible little sniffle to be here with us today. Thank you also to the legendary Dickie Moore for doing the music, what is at the beginning, the end, and the middle bits of this podcast. And thank you to my lovely, delightful, clever, sophisticated little niece, Arabella, for reading out the babble.
You can get in touch with us and tell us what you thought of the show. We are on Twitter at The Babble Wagon. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Sustainababble or drop us an email to hello@sustainababble.fish. And however you consume us, and we know that you do consume us, do leave us a little review and a rating, ideally with lots of stars in it. Please, because it all makes a difference. And it means that the delights of the babble can be spread around the world like Santa Claus giving presents to the good people every year.
Okay, we will be back next week for Sustainababble 68. Ooh, just one shy of the best babble number ever.
Your mind is a sewer, isn't it? Your mind is a is an acid-laden, metal-heavy sewer. If a snow goose landed on your mind, its feet would be turning to jelly before it could flap off again.
Well, that may be true. In the meantime, enjoy yourselves. Enjoy yourself, Dave.
I shall.
Get better soon.
I shall enjoy myself very far away from you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Sorry, I thought I was going to sneeze. But I didn't.